The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Hey then, you're welcome back. So delighted to say Dame Delaney's still with us, and we're joined in studio by Jack Byrne. Jack, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks a million for popping in.
No problem.
The joys of being around Dublin, you can just do that now.
Yeah, it's good, yeah.
So listen, let's start with the debut, which could not have went better than you would have even hoped for at your most greedy, really.
Yeah, just I was going onto the pitch. I had, I think, 30 minutes or something, and I thought, you know, I might not get this 30 minutes again. So if I'm going to go out showing people what you are and what you're about, and that's all I try to do, just try to show people this is me, and if it's good enough, then great, and if not, at least didn't change and I was myself. Look,
it's a great attitude, because it would be very easy to go out there and say, look, it's my first game, I'm just not going to make a mistake, I'm not going to stand out here, I'll just show I can fit in.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm the kind of player that would have been in the squad if I was just doing that, you know what I mean? So I think for me, I need to be creative, and I need to be getting on the ball, because, you know, I'm not 6'4", and I'm not going to go around smashing people. So my way of affecting the game is to get on the ball and try and create stuff, and look, thank God I had a hand to play in two of the goals, but look, it's not going to be like that all the time, you know, but just really happy how it went, yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the nod from Mick early in the week, a nod and a wink to say, listen, you're going to get some game time, or did you spend a lot of the night on the bench kicking your heels wondering?
No, he told me, when was it? I think a couple of days before the game, it might have been the day before the game, we did team shape and I wasn't in the shape, and he pulled me and said, look, you're going to be involved tomorrow, and you're not going to just play 2 minutes. You're going to, you know, you're going to play a good part. So if you want to tell your family to come, get on the phone and tell them. Like, so
that's a fun look, phone call to make.
Yeah, it was. I actually didn't tell anybody, because you still don't know. You still don't know what way the game is going to go. So I didn't want to be ringing everybody saying, oh, I'm going to play tomorrow, I'm going to play, come to the game, because you don't know, football is crazy.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be in
you didn't want to jinx it almost.
Yeah, I've heard that loads as well.
So sorry, did you not say in any way to somebody, listen, just make sure you're there tomorrow? No?
We did, we said to they were all going anyways. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
So who's your network? Who are the people that you had to be there for you?
Me ma, all my uncles, you know, me brother, my sister. There was just a lot of people there that I knew were going to the game anyway, so I didn't want to say that, look, I'm going to play, just in case I didn't and disappoint anybody. Obviously, not disappoint anybody, but, you know, just I didn't want to say it. And then put too much pressure on myself as well, because you're not only, you'd feel a little bit more pressure if you're telling everybody, I'm going to play, you know what I mean? So I just wanted to enjoy it. I didn't know when it was going to come around again, if it was.
Yeah.
So we just thought, you know what, just don't say too much and just try and enjoy it and just go with the flow. And
do you get nervous? How did you sleep that night before?
I don't know. I just stuck the head in the pillow for as long as possible. I didn't fall asleep probably till late that night. Right. But you know, you're thinking all these things. Off the ball falls out there, they'll put it in the top corner from here. All these mad.
So you
things.
Do a bit of visualisation or dreaming or thinking about just, it. That
just,
stuff.
Just dreaming, you know, just dreaming about getting on the pitch. You know, he said himself, it's one of those things that you obviously dream of since you're a kid, like, you know. So, you obviously, I have all these mad things going through your head, but I just thought, you know, just try and get a good night's rest and then give it a wash the next day.
What minute did you come on in?
I think I came on the 60th minute.
You don't think, you know exactly what minute you came on.
60th minute, yeah, something like that, yeah.
And I'd say, does some part of your mind as you jog onto the pitch think, well, I've done it now? Like, can't take that away from me. I've played for Ireland. That must be an amazing moment.
Yeah, just like a relief, excitement, undescribable feeling, really, when you're jogging on, you're looking up, and I have this memory of looking up into the Aviva, and there's this Irish flag just waving, and you're jogging onto the pitch, and as you're jogging on, you can just look up and you see this flag like above everything else, and it's a crazy feeling. And
think of family.
Yeah, just thinking of everything. You know, obviously, everybody knows I lost my dad when I was 11, so that was running through my mind. And then, obviously, during the game, we got a throw in. I looked over and I seen all my family there, big flag hanging over the side. So,
right,
you know,
okay.
These things
amazing.
Are unexplainable feelings and, you know, just something really, really proud of.
I presume your family are giving you a big wave when you look over and.
Yeah, you don't. You're trying not to look, but you still see them, do you know what I mean? but probably had about 40 of them scattered around the place anyways.
Yeah. Do you remember your debut well?
Yeah, it was Serbia at Croke Park. And like Jack said, there's something that you never forget. Just walking up Croke Park and, you know, when you're standing facing the tricolour and around Venus playing, that's when it really kind of hit for me. It was like, oh my God, that, you know, it's real now, you know. And we were standing facing the hill for the national anthem, and that was obviously very, 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 very emotional time.
Yeah.
But then you quickly put it out of your mind because you want, you know, you got to focus on the task at hand, and you can kind of, your family can tell you how great you are after the game and everything. But sure, when Jack came on, he was fully focused on trying to help Ireland win the game with the way the game was. So,
how did you play in your debut?
I did okay, yeah. I think we beat Serbia 1-0, I think it was. I say you never forget your debut, I can't remember the score. I think we won. But you know what, now that I'm finished, I look back on this stuff an awful lot more fondly now, and I, you know, certain things always pop into my mind and I was like, oh, that was great. Was at the time I never really stopped to smell the roses, you know what I mean? The cap was in the bag and I was like, forget about that next one now, and I was just kept focused on getting the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So when Jack gets to my age, you'll be able to sit down with your kids, your family, and you know, I was moving house there recently, and I opened up a box and had just like a load of jerseys in it,
okay,
you know, from earlier on, and they were in a Morrison's plastic bag actually, and I just remember taking out, looking at them, and just brought back some memories and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah. I used to go to them games in Croke Park, like, because I only live across the road. A funny story, like when Glenn Whelan, I was telling him about it, when Glenn Whelan scored that goal against Italy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2-2, the cracker, I think it was. I was at the bunking into the game. And my ma was at the getting me a new jacket. And I came back, and as I was bunking in, the security guards grabbed me and took the hood off the jacket. So I've gone back to my ma, what's going on? Like, she's gone,
where's your jacket?
Where's the hood off your jacket? We said, oh, funny story, but I remember telling Glenn about it, he was laughing.
Jeez, isn't that mad?
Yeah, mad, like,
it's
years ago.
All that, doesn't it?
from bunking in to then playing with Glenn Whelan. I'd say he felt young when you told him that story.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
you got yourself involved, as you say, you know, so it's interesting that you had that attitude that, look, this may never happen again, so if I'm going down, I'm going down firing.
Yeah.
Initially, it looked to me from up in the stands, there hadn't been a pattern where there was much passing going on. It was just an average enough game, typical friendly and probably a bit broken up. And you started really aggressively, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. There's a couple of times where it didn't go to you, almost because it had been that sort of game. And you were having a few words with the person who hadn't give it to you. You'd say almost, here, if you're not going to give it to me, there's no point in me being here. As it went on, you started getting on the ball a lot more and you actually changed the pattern of it. So that those first few minutes when you're trying to almost, give me the ball, what are your memory of that?
Just wanting to get on the ball.
Yeah.
Just wanting to try and affect it. But you have to earn players' trust, you know what I mean? I obviously hadn't played before, I trained with them, but it's completely different, you know what I mean? And when I was out there, we think after a couple of times, when they did give me the ball, then, you know, they'd obviously, you earned our trust, and as the game went on, I felt more comfortable. They probably got used to the areas I was taking up as well, so it probably helped everybody.
It was amazing to watch it, actually, because they did quickly then start trusting you and saying, all right, look, I'll give it to you, And then very quickly, then they started looking for you, and it's like you can see how pros quickly adapt and they realise, okay, he wants it, he can take it in those positions. And
Another thing, like, I was coming on, obviously, my debut, full of excitement, like, you know, for somebody like I don't know, Jeff Hendrick or Glenn Whelan, or, you know, it might be different for them going on in that game. And they've already played, I don't know, 70 times or 50 times, Jeff. So for me, it was just pure excitement and, you know, wanting to do well. So it was obviously buzzing, you know what I mean? So, look, it was, it went well. Probably went, you know, better than I ever could have dreamed of. Mm. But just getting on the pitch for me was unbelievable. So, look. Yeah. Just wanted the ball. That was all.
It's a good situation for you to come on into, because almost like, you know, we were in the ascendancy. They were kind of sitting back a little bit, and you knew there was pockets for you to get on the ball. Exactly. Like, imagine if Ireland were winning 1-0, and Mick kind of throws you on to say, look, can you release a little bit of pressure here? It's difficult, and I know we were chasing the game, but it was still great for you, the type of player that you are, to come into that environment.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I'd watched the game as well for the first 60 minutes, so I kind of knew. I had a good idea. Sometimes it's different when you're in the game and you're trying to figure it out when you're in the game. So I was watching it, so I could see maybe areas where I could pick the ball up and affect it. So that helped me as well, you know.
Yeah. And so you were taking corners as well. Who makes that decision?
I think Connor went off and
you just start trotting over to the corner
flag. I think I was closest to it, yeah. So I just just went over, like, you know. I take them from my clubs.
Of course, yeah. But even those deliveries were good. So when you're walking off, you must have a sense, I know that went well.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I spoke to a couple of the lads and they obviously said, you know, well done. And But you don't think about it. It was only a couple of days really after that I kind of thought about it and said, that was mad, like, you know.
Did you watch it back?
Actually, yeah, I've watched it back. Yeah, of course I have. Like, you know, I watched myself running onto the pitch and stuff and got goosebumps still, like, you know. And videos that my family have took of me out there and stuff like that. It's something you can take to the grave, which isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. What did Mick say much to you afterwards?
He just said, well done. Yeah. He said, congratulations. And then he sent us a text a couple of days after saying, you know, well done and, you know, congratulations on making your debut, but that was it really.
Yeah. So look, we're making a big deal of it. I know you have to refocus and keep going and there's stuff going on at club level and you want to be in the next squad, but it's worth just remembering it for a few minutes and enjoying it.
Definitely.
Yeah. So do you go out with the family that night and have a celebratory dinner or are you kind of low-key enough back to the house?
Yeah, no, we went back, we were still in the hotel. So I went back to the hotel and then we just had one or two drinks and then bedtime and that was it. And then the next day I was in with Air Sport doing some media stuff with Wes Brown and Emil Heskey and Shane Stubble. So done that and then that was it. Then finished, went out with the family that night and enjoyed it and it was great. Like.
Yeah, brilliant. Things seem to be going really well for you back in Dublin. You're enjoying your football, you're playing really well. Played for Ireland, which, you know, it's a big deal when you're in the League of Ireland. So talk to us about what it is about your life now and playing football in Dublin that is working for you so well.
I was just talking to him there about it. It's just about, I'm just feeling time a lot better. I'm around people who have my best interests at heart and, you know, they want me to do well and I'm just really happy at the moment and that's the only way I can describe it, really. I'm not really doing anything different.
In terms of your training or your attitude?
Training is still the same because it was always full time. I was always in that kind of environment where you can't really take your foot off the pedal. But, you know, I'm doing things now that's helping me stay in the team for all sorts of games, whether we're playing in Europe or whether we're playing against Finn Harps away, which is different challenges, you know. So I think that was my problem before. I couldn't get into a team, or if I got into the team, I didn't do enough to stay in the team maybe for the games that didn't suit my kind of play. So taking the manager's instructions and now and trying to work on them because, look, that's what's going to keep me in the team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a side of football that doesn't often get spoken about and it's difficult that, you know, when training finishes, you have a lot of time and it's difficult sometimes. Some people do, and I've seen it loads, they find it difficult to fill time. And then they're not saying the jackdaws, but some people go down the road they shouldn't go down. Some people get bored and mentally they come down a level and stuff. It's difficult, and I'm a big believer that a happy player is a good player.
Definitely.
And Jack being back in Dublin with his family, I know what it's like. Me, when I came back and played for Cork City, you know, you're going to your mum's house for a bit of dinner. You know, you can have a cup of tea there and drift away home. Whereas, you know, when you're in England and you're on your own, you know, you're kind of training finishes and you're like, well, what do I do at 8 o'clock now tomorrow morning? And it is difficult, you know.
Would it not, say in your experience, Damien, would you have just hung out with teammates or would you have been
bit? Not necessarily. See, it depends what type of environment, because sometimes you're in a team where a lot of lads are older, their own families. You know, sometimes lads are your age, but they want to do things that you're not really necessarily interested in, you know. I was always fortunate that I was quite happy to be on my own. I was quite happy to kind of fill time or I'd find things to do. I was quite good at that, but I've seen people in Jack's situation where they do find it difficult.
How did you find time on your own, Jack? Was it time on your own for you?
Yeah, it was the thinking. If you know, if you've had a bad game or... when I was in Holland, we only played once a week, so... That was difficult, like, you know, I was over in a country where I didn't speak a language, you know, first language, obviously Dutch, and I didn't speak it. And
ironically, you did well there, though.
Yeah, I'd done well, like, but...
It was tough.
It was hard. Okay. That was probably one of the hardest parts of my career because, and I was lucky enough that I had family to come over to me a lot and help me out, but sometimes we'd be playing on Friday. You might not play till the next Sunday.
And what would you do?
You might not have had the best game on a Friday, so...
Okay. Your head's
fried. That's playing on your mind, you're on your own. You know, obviously it wasn't around any of my friends that I'd made in Manchester. You're going home, all these things running through your head, and then, you know, you've got to go out probably the next Sunday sometimes over there because all the games are on television. So that was difficult, like, you know, and
And are you sat in digs, kicking your heels?
I was just sat in an apartment on my own, like, you know, in the middle of a small town called Leeuwarden, just outside Amsterdam, just trying to, you know, do anything really to keep the mind active. So that was probably one of the reasons why I ended up coming home and coming back to Blackburn at the time. And it was Manchester and a lot of my friends were there. But look, was that the best career move for me at the time? Probably not. Do you know what I mean? But I did it because I was thinking, I don't really know if we could do this for another year.
Right.
I was only 20, like, you know, so...
Were you cooking for yourself and all that?
Yeah, doing all that, but, like, you're doing that at 4 or 5 o'clock and then what you're doing then for the rest of the night and what you're doing up until 4 or 5 o'clock. So, look, it's difficult and that's the side of it that people don't see, but I'm older now and, you know, I know what makes me tick and I know what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. And, you know, it's just experience, just more experience.
What were the mistakes you fell into, or what were the things you look back at and say, well, that was obviously not going to help me?
Well, not even like mistakes of going out or, you know, stuff like that. It was just when you're like running through things in your head and then you're not going out and you don't have that release. Do you know what I mean? So now I have that release where I'll go and speak to people and I'll say, look, you know, I'm struggling here or whatever, and I need someone to come over to me for a few days. I used to think that, you know, my family or my friends, they'd only want to come over to me to watch me play football. And that wasn't the case. They were coming over to me to see me. They were coming over to see, you know, Jack Bourne, who had been living at home for how long? Like, my ma would never come over to me to just see me play football. She was just coming over to check and see if her son was all right. And
yes.
I couldn't get my head around that. And then, you know, when I wasn't in the team, I'd feel guilty if they were coming over. And I'd be like, oh, I'm letting you down, don't come over this week, I'm not in the team. Do you know what I mean? When I should have just been like, yeah, come over, I want
to
see you.
In hindsight, it's a crazy thing, as if to think a mother wouldn't be coming over to see her son. As well, if he's not playing, I don't want to know anything about him.
And even my friends, and you know, I'd sometimes go long times without seeing them because I wasn't playing in the team, and that was ridiculous at the time. And I know that now, like, you know, so just a lot more chilled out about it all.
What age were you when you went over to City?
I probably moved over when I was about 14 and a half.
And how did you find it? Did you settle in okay there?
Yeah, I settled in alright. I had a digs man who was unbelievable to me. He would do anything for me. And the club was brilliant. First couple of months on such a high, everybody speaking about you, this is great. But then, you know, I couldn't play an under-18s game for a year. So I couldn't really do anything. I was just training with the 18s every day, and then the hype starts to go down a little bit, and then you're thinking, right, hang on a minute, this is it, like, you know, this is basically the rest of my life. I signed a 5-year deal there. You know, I loved every minute of it. There was unbelievable people there, Fergal Hark and Brian Marwood, who would, you know, do whatever I needed at the time. You know, Patrick Vieira then, my reserve team manager, he was, you know, unbelievable for my career. He was probably the one that got me to move to Holland. So, yeah, look, it was going well, but, you know, you're missing out on a lot. You're giving up a lot. And, you know, but I'd do it again, of course, I would in a heartbeat, but, look, it is difficult.
It's incredibly difficult there. Like, Phil Foden is a one in a million, really, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And you even look now, is he getting the games when he deserves? Probably not. You know, I speak to Phil now. I was talking to him the other day about the Ireland thing, he said congrats and stuff like that. So, you know, to see him doing well is great, but, you know, he probably still should be,
he probably wants
to play more, and, you know, probably
and
should be.
Did you go there with the attitude of, the odds on me making the first team here are very slim, and I understand that, so I'm just going to get the best football education I can? Or did you go over there thinking, I really want to try and make the first team here?
Well, I went over there thinking that it's basically a world academy. They could go and take players from wherever they wanted. And I thought if they were taking me, you know, when I spoke to them, they were saying, we want to take the best group of young players from around the world, put them together, basically like the best academy in the world. So when I was hearing this stuff, obviously Patrick Vieira was around with to get the, you know, the reserve team job when he was finishing up playing. Look, let's not be stupid as well. The money was unbelievable for a 14-year-old going over. I'm not going to say it wasn't. So all these factors coming into it. But when they were saying that, you know, some people should have said, were saying to me, you maybe should have gone to a lower team in the league, I don't know, like a Sunderland or something like that. And I was thinking to myself, well, if I'm going here and I'm training against the best players, and then we're going to be playing in the U Champions League, you know, the under-21s International Cup Champions League, basically, you know, this is only going to improve my game. And as a small technical player, for me to get the most out of my game, I thought this was an unbelievable environment to go into.
Makes
and
sense.
Try and learn.
Yeah. Did it prove? Did you stand by that?
So.
It worked out, yeah.
Because the best part of my game is obviously my technical side. So I think I got the very most out of that side at that club. And then when I went to Holland, it obviously opened up doors for me to go on loan in Holland and play against the likes of PSV, Ajax, all these teams. So would I have got that opportunity if I wasn't playing in the U Champions League and had scored a handful of goals or whatever and done well and I was at a lower team in the Premier League? Probably not. So look, I went there and, you know, the team I had, I was playing in, we had Jason Denayer, Olivier Ancham, Marco Lopez, you know, these players are, Angelino now going back to Man City, these players are phenomenal players even now. So
And probably, you know, playing against the best as well in
exactly,
the U Champions League.
Yeah, playing, like, I think we played against Schalke and Leroy Sané played, and we scored a goal. We drew 1-1 in the game, under-19s Champions League. Similar, obviously, to what Troy Parrott is playing in now. So to be playing against these players, he went out the week after and scored in the Bernabeu. So, you know, it's just to test yourself against these players, I thought, and to train with these players and learn from these coaches. I said it's a no-brainer, like, you know.
Yeah. Shamrock Rovers will love me for asking this question. Do you have ambitions to get back over to the UK?
No, I have ambitions to play at the highest level that I can play at, whether that's the UK or, you know, abroad, or if it's at Shamrock Rovers, then, you know, so be it. But I just, every player will want to play at the highest level they can, and that's all. And I'm not really thinking about anything else at the moment. I'm just trying to get the best out of myself and squeeze the best out of myself and just keep pushing. Like,
it's an amazing, like, career path that you took from, like, 14 to how old, you know?
23.
Like, I mean, that is...
You packed a lot in.
I mean, that is phenomenal. And then to come back to Rovers and do what you've done, I think if you went, not necessarily England, the world doesn't begin in England, there's plenty of places you can go and play football. You've been such a better place mentally, emotionally, your maturity level would be so much different. I took a completely different path to you when I was 18 or 19 when I went over, and I had a job before I went, you know, so I was more developed as a person, becoming a man, really. I mean, to go over 14 and to be taken away out of your environment that you're in, I mean, that is a, and you can never advise against it, and you'd have to do it again, of course, well, I would never ever say that, like, but, you know, in the 8 or 9 years since you went over, I mean, that's just a phenomenal, like, story. For you to go back over now, I think you'd have a different kind of viewpoint of it, and you're definitely starting from a better starting point as well.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, you've got to take into consideration the knock as well from leaving Man City.
It's a big
and
step
that
down.
Knock from, you know, when I went to Blackburn on loan, and I wasn't playing, and I had done so well in Holland the year before, and I was a Man City player, and you go to Blackburn Championship, and you're deemed, you know, not good enough to play in that team. It's a knock, like, you know.
And were they looking at you saying, yeah, look, we like the pretty football and the nice touches, but actually, we need some lad who can tackle and run, and we need to fight off relegation. Was that the environment almost?
Yeah, look, what happened was, I went there, I was told I was going to play in the number 10, and, you know, we got beat, I think, our first 4 or 5 games in the Championship, and we went from playing, you know, nice football, expansive football, to playing 4-4-2, and there was no place for me in a 4-4-2 team. And if I had been told that when I went there, I would never have been allowed to go there by Man City, because they would never have allowed that. So
that's like professional pragmatism kicking in, ruthless business. It's, you know, managers got to survive. So if, and that, not putting words in your mouth, but if you make the next move, you got to pick the right club and the right manager and go to the right environment.
Yeah, but look, they have to pick me.
Of course,
you know what I mean?
It's, sure.
I'd love to pick a club myself, but, like, nobody, whatever, you know, it probably doesn't happen. Like, it's whoever fancies you and wants you will come and take you, and then you have to make a decision whether that's right for you or not. And
Rovers are playing very good football.
Yeah, we are. We're a very good side, and we've got some good players. Pico obviously got called up to Cape Verde, so, you know, buzzing for him. And, like, we've got a very good side. We've got, you know, Graham Burks, an international, Danny Lafferty, Joey O'Brien. You know, it's a serious side.
And a passing,
you
know, side as well.
Yeah, we do. We play football, and we tried it. We probably didn't play a lot of football against Bowles, but we got the result. And, you know, he's building something there, the manager, that's you know, going places.
And the cup final's obviously going to be a great event. Am I reading something about you paying half a lad's taxi fare?
Yeah. We said, some fella got a taxi to the Bowers game, and he was meeting him and said, I'd give him half, yeah.
He was meant to be at a wedding?
Yeah, he was meant to be at a wedding.
Bailed on the wedding to come to the match.
That's brilliant, isn't it? That's what it's all about.
I think there was a picture of him in like his three-piece suit, and I think he told his other half, I'm going to go upstairs and watch the match.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Got in a taxi.
Yeah, got in a taxi to Daily Mail. That's brilliant, like, you know, that's what it's all about.
Richie and Kildare, lots of nice texts coming in for you saying congrats and well done on the debut. And Richie says, Jack's the reason I started going to League of Ireland games. Great to watch. And the atmosphere at Rovers is unreal at the moment. My 9-year-old rang me before school, let me know he'd made the Irish squad. He was more excited than me. That's a nice one, isn't it?
That's crazy.
Let me see, what else have we got? Jack, just wondering, have you always done the little jinky run up to the dead ball? Any reason why, or does it just work for you? From John in Eaton Derry.
I don't know. My friends have nicknamed it the Ballybox Shuffle. it's just something that helps me just steady myself before I whip a ball in.
Do you work hard in them?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I practice them all the time, yeah, to be fair. You know, set pieces are massive, so if you're on them and you keep hitting the front force man and you overhit them, then, you know, you're not going to be on them for too long and your teammates aren't going to be happy. So it's just something we practice, and the shuffle, it's just something that helps me just get settled before.
You're a good man as well, I've noticed. You like pulling your shorts up.
Yeah.
What's that about? Is that just to feel strong and big and you like tight-fitting clothes or something?
I don't know.
You're always at your shorts.
Yeah, they get soaking wet when you're playing, so we just thought, like, they'd be dragging at me quads, so I just try and flick them up past me quads sometimes.
Right. Paolo Di Canio used to wear very tight shorts to feel like he was big and strong, so I didn't know what you were at there.
But no, definitely not big and strong.
So what's the plan then? Obviously, you're beginning to Ireland camp. I mean, brilliant.
Yeah.
It must be kind of pinching yourself a little bit and excited.
Yeah, crazy. Just really proud. And, you know, meet up on Sunday. We obviously have a game on Saturday that you want to do well in, want to do well in the league and finish the league off strong and respect the league the way it should be, and go away and then come back and all eyes are on the last two games and the cup final.
How have you found the Irish environment? I know you'd been in even a couple of years ago, but I even saw a picture of you when Shane Lowry popped in with the claret jug and you were holding that and you looked like you'd fit it in nicely, and it's funny, you know, you're telling Glenn Whelan those stories, so it seems like it's gone well and you've settled in okay.
Like, it's the more you go in, the more comfortable you feel, the more, you know, the more you get to know the lads, and you'll sit and have a coffee or whatever and, you know, catch up. And
who are you hitting it off with?
I'll be mates with Jeff and, you know, obviously Ronan Gordon is my age and a couple of the other lads, so it's good.
Would you have played against Jeff when he was at Joseph's growing up, and Robbie Brady and all these lads? Were you similar?
No, they were about 5 years older than me.
We used to
watch that side. I used to watch them.
That Joey's side?
No, St. Kevin's.
St. Kevin's, sorry, right.
St. Kevin's, yeah. So
that was Brady and Hendrick.
Brady and Hendrick, yeah. So they were going toe-to-toe with Belvo in the All-Irelands and the leagues at that time. So I only live in Ballybox, so we used to go up and watch them. So yeah, it looked crazy to be playing beside them. Now obviously it's manager.
Who was your schoolboy?
We were St. Kevin's.
Were you as well?
Yeah,
okay,
St. Kevin's.
So hence you're watching them. And who are your roommate? Do you have a roommate in the Ireland?
Room on my own. Yeah, we all have a room on our own, yeah.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Ah, jeez,
so,
room on the own. Do you get that in your day?
Modern football, no.
Listen, there's a ton of text saying congrats, keep it going, you're doing brilliant. So well done, best of luck over the next few weeks. Jack Byrne, great to have you in, and keep it going at Rovers as well. We'll take a short break, thanks.
Thank you.
The Football Show on Off the Ball with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well, do it then. Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
Oh, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So if you're just tuning in on podcast, Damien Delaney is here once again this evening. Already we've had Jack Byrne in. You've probably just heard that on the podcast if you're listening that way. If you're tuning into the radio, he was great. He was in around 7:30, in really good form, seems to be in a good place. You were definitely struck by the going over as a 14-year-old to Man City thing. was that a possibility for you? Did you have clubs sniffing around at 14, 15? You didn't have that choice to make?
I definitely didn't. I was definitely not.
You weren't fighting off Alex Ferguson or anything?
Oh, no, Jesus, no. There was definitely no one looking for me at that age, you know.
I guess you would have gone, though, would you?
Look, there's no right or wrong way to go about this. I'm a firm believer that the cream always rises. Okay, there's many different routes you can take. Someone can go over at Jack Byrne's age of 14 and be successful. Some can go over like I did at 19 and be successful. Some people can go over 14, come back and go back over again. So there's many different ways to do it. Ultimately, what it comes down to is, one, how badly does the player want it? And two, is he willing to persevere through it? Because there's nobody gets to the level that Jack got to, or even, you know, to play regular first team football in the Premier League Championship or any professional level in England without going through some difficulties. And when you encounter difficulties, it's how you react to them, how you deal with them, and how you move past them. Some people kind of encounter a small hurdle and they crumble. Other people can counter, you know, monumental issues and come overcome them. So there's no right way or wrong way. It's very, very difficult to tell a kid not to go.
It's very tough. And especially if it's a big club, and say they're throwing a couple of hundred grand at you, and they're offering you the best football education you'll get. I mean, if your head's screwed on, you can say, well, look, at worst, you're going to go over there for a couple of years. It may not work out. You'll have a couple of hundred grand in the bank, come back, finish your education, and you're actually very well set up for life. Mm. You know, but I guess if you're going over and it's I have to make it, and you don't, that's a massive body blow. And then you're a long way from home as well. It depends on the kid, you know, how mature they are too.
You know, I mean, look, when Jack kind of went out on loan to Blackburn and Oldham and stuff like that, you know, he wasn't playing. And I can imagine then how difficult it is to fill your week when you're not playing. Mm. Because at least if you're playing, you can kind of finish a game on a Saturday. And the way I always was like, you know, 5 o'clock Saturday, okay, that game is done. Regardless of what happened, let's start building for next week. Right, and all of a sudden now every day your process of going through to get ready for next Saturday. I know Jack said he struggled in Holland to fill those days, but I was always kind of focused on the upcoming game on a Saturday and kind of, you know, prepping myself, food, hydration, rest, everything, you know, so I didn't mind being on my own because I felt it was for a purpose. Whereas when you're not playing and you've got nothing to look forward to, you've got nothing to rest and recover for, I think that's when you really do fall down. But look, he's in a great place right now. You know, it was the first time I met him. I played against him a couple of times this year when I was playing against Rovers at Waterford, and I didn't know the guy. But he seems to have a nice level of maturity, and he seems to have taken that the, we'll call them setbacks, but whatever you know setbacks that he's had, and he looks like to regather himself.
And don't take this personally, by the way. This is a general question. Do you think you'd have been a better technical footballer if you'd been full time from the age of 14, 15?
That's an interesting one. That I don't know if no. I think I would have been technically better, but maybe I wouldn't have been filled with the desire to make it right. You know, I mean, you know, me growing up, I didn't have any real coaching till I went to Cork City, really, under 18s, and that was the first time I had a little, you know, some coaching, really. The rest of it was just like running and strength and, you know, give it everything you have type of stuff, which served me well. But then obviously I had the chip on my shoulder that I never went to England as a 16-year-old, and I kind of brought that chip round with me.
You did have a bit of a chip, did you? I'm going to show everyone, did you?
Of course you do, yeah, of course you do. I got several chips.
We've just seen a really good goal at Anfield as we're speaking there, and it's for Salzburg, so they've gone 3-2. It's a big turnaround. This wasn't on the cards in the first half.
It's amazing. And you know what? Adrian had an absolute get-out-of-jail-free card about 5 minutes ago, trying to be clever again, ball back to him, and he tried to get it out to Trent Alexander-Arnold, and the centre-forward read him, charged it down. He's very unlucky that when he charged it down, it ran out for a goal kick. But here they take a quick free kick down the left. Liverpool are scrambling back, and it's a great ball in, and it's a great finish, really, you know. I mean, it's bounced. Would you be harsh saying that Adrian should have done a little bit better? Maybe not. I mean, you know, it's a good goal from their point of view, but it's a great game.
It's a bit like last night, really. The slightest little mishap, good teams really pounce on it.
I think you know, real elite goalkeeper will
get a finger to that.
We'll get something on that.
Yeah. Because actually, we must ask Jack Byrne about it again when he's in sometime, but I was watching yesterday a bit of Spurs Bayern Munich in the youth Champions League, the way it mirrors the seniors, before you came into the office. So they had it on BT Sport now. Just want to show everything. So they have the youth Champions League on. It's incredible. Like, in a way, it was like non-contact football. It really was. So you see the same patterns. You see the centre half splitting and the fullbacks pushing on. Everything's very structured and everything's very pretty and by the book. It's very textbook, you know. And very few players are taking each other on. And I did. It's interesting to compare. Does that make you a better player ultimately than yourself running around, great determination, fire, and not having the subtleties?
Well, the way I look at that is, or my point of view on that is, you can learn the things that they teach in those academies. I'm not sure you can teach someone to have heart, and you can teach someone to be of good character, and teach someone to be determined.
Yeah.
Right. I think so. As I went in my football career, hence the reason that my career started and. Well, not started, but you know, my first playing regularly was in League Two, you know, and I learned every step of the way, and I kind of got better and better and better till I got to the level that I got to. When I first went over to England, I did play in the Premier League, but I was nowhere near good enough to play in the Premier League. I had to learn an awful lot, technically, tactically, but physically, I was always in really, really good condition. I was durable, and I was, you know, reliable for managers. You know, I wasn't injury prone and stuff, so I was kind of churning out 46, 50 games a season there for a long time. All those things you can't really teach, I don't think, if I'm being honest with you, but the stuff that you see there in the UEFA Champions League, you can teach it, and while it is fantastic, I believe that type of stuff is a dime a dozen everywhere, you know? You know, you just need to you need to have that extra little edge as well. You know, you need to bring something to the party that other people don't.
Yeah, because on TV watching it looked like a very enjoyable game to play in. Everyone was in their shape and everyone was passing. Salzburg could be in here again. Oof. Side netting. Yeah. Liverpool on the back foot here, 50.
Yeah.
But it looked like a really nice game to play in. Like, but it looked like nobody was really hurting themselves or tackling.
I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it then.
Yeah, it was exhibition kind of stuff, you know, and it was all by the book. And it's interesting to see that's where youth football is at the top level in Europe.
I mean, look, that's just the way it is because, you know, but then you're kind of wanting to get a small number of players who are going to come out of that to be technically good enough to come and play at this level. But then you watch this game tonight.
Tackles.
I mean, it's hell for leather. Both teams are really going at it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's helping these kids prepare for this or not.
Something which I guess ties in with Pochettino, who we touched on there. We were talking to Pat Nevin about this on Monday. So Newcastle obviously had a hiding against Leicester at the weekend, and invariably everything leaks out from dressing rooms now. So Luke Edwards in The Telegraph, I'm sure Steve Bruce will love this, but they talked about how Newcastle players remained silent during a brutal appraisal of their dismal performance by Steve Bruce. He questioned their desire and their ability to play for the club. An expletive-ridden outburst after the final whistle. He accused some of them of trying to hide behind him since he was appointed as Rafa's replacement because they knew he's taking all the flack for bad results. According to one witness inside the dressing room at the King Power Stadium, the extent of Bruce's anger left the entire team hanging their heads in shame, and there was not a murmur of discontent. They just stared at the floor, the source told The Telegraph. I'm sure Steve Bruce is trying to figure out who this source is. And then Bruce told them, do not come into training tomorrow. I don't want to see you again. And he said to staff, I'll just get angry if I see them again. So they had the Monday off. How commonplace was this kind of stuff as you went on? The stereotypical manager having a rant, saying all the things we can imagine Bruce is saying to all these players of different ages. Because what we hear more and more is that, well, you can't say that stuff to younger players, and two, wow, Salzburg have just scored a third. Every time we try and have a conversation on this bloody show, there have been goals flying in. 60 minutes gone, Liverpool 3, Salzburg 3. Incredible.
It's like role reversal. They're playing at the pace and the tempo that Liverpool were at. And Liverpool can't live with it, whereas Salzburg couldn't live with it. So it's just a fascinating game, absolutely fascinating.
Cameras cut to Klopp. He's having a conversation with someone on the sideline. They did pick out Van Dijk as well. We haven't seen the actual goal in real time yet. We'll see it.
Oh, this is a Steve Bruce quote.
Yeah. So they're in the penalty area, Salzburg. At this stage, everything looks reasonably okay for Liverpool. Ball is knocked in. Van Dijk.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah,
Van Dijk. Talk to me.
I mean, look, you can. Yeah, I think.
The ball's played across the box. Van Dijk tries to stop it, and then free man at the back post.
Yeah.
Bad goal to concede.
He wouldn't be particularly happy. I think Van Dijk's a little bit soft to his defending there. He's possibly could see the danger a little bit quicker, come across and stop it before the guy gets to the end line to square it. And even then when he does square it, you can say he's touch unlucky, it's gone through his legs, but it looked a little bit soft.
Yeah. 3-3, incredible. Their manager's given a Jose Mourinho down the sideline as well. So there we are. So Steve Bruce, these kind of rants, was this a feature of your professional life? I'm getting one of these a month kind of thing? Or
listen, when I first started my career, you know, it was on a daily basis, stuff like that. You know, that's just the way the world was, and managers just made sure they stayed on top of the players. Definitely towards the end, I mean, you know, you probably only get one or two of those as a manager, but I mean, it looks like those players aren't on side with him anyway. And we wouldn't have to be a rocket scientist. I mean, those quotes, they all sound rather like you're reading between the lines. I'm not sure who his source is, like, but you could kind of see that stuff happening. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or an insider to know that was happening, that Steve Bruce is saying stuff like, oh, you're hiding behind me. And he's not like the players are. I mean, you know, you could see that before you heard that quote. So,
Effective? Did it work sometimes? A good talk?
It does work, you know, but you got to know your group really well. You know, if your group are the type that will actually, and you've got characters in your group that will take that in the right manner and come in the following week training and really have a good going training, or will there be fellas that will kind of just want to take a step back from that and go, you know what, we'll get another couple of weeks, three weeks, because you're going to get it and you're probably going to be gone soon. That's probably their mentality right now.
It's so cynical, those footballer attitudes sometimes.
Yeah, possibly, you know.
Another 3 weeks, another few 3 weeks.
Well, it is, like, I mean, you know, I don't remember reading anything anywhere about any Newcastle players getting hammered. They're the ones that went out and got beat 4-0, you know.
That must add to his anger, because he knows and they know it's me who's getting all the flack here.
Yeah.
And that must be, like, you all know that it's me who's getting it, and you're all going home tonight, and it's
well,
fine.
You see, like, I mean, if you had a certain amount of feeling for that manager, you'd feel bad for him, because you think, you know, I really like this guy, and he doesn't deserve this, you know, because he's honest, he's doing his best in really, really trying situations, because he was on hiding to nothing. And I think if the manager comes in and kind of endears himself to the players, certainly me, anyway, I would look at it, I would look at him and go, oh, man, you're a good guy, and you know, you might go down, but I'm going to have a couple of swings for you here and I'm going to have a go, right? That would be my attitude. Whereas if he came in and he was not really, you know, endearing himself to the group and was maybe not where he should be, then I can get kind of going, well, you're not helping yourself here, man, so, you know, we're probably not going to be able to help you either. So I don't know, I'm not on the inside of those situations.
Sure.
There's a hell of a lot of scenarios there you could go through.
It's hard to interpret the players looking down at their feet. Is that because they feel really bad for Steve
Bruce?
But
what else are they supposed to do, though? You know, I mean, of course, look, I mean, I've been sat in changing room with managers absolutely going off, and you do, you just look at the floor and just go, oh God, here we go, right? I mean, you can't say anything back, so, you know, ideally you would like the players to sit up straight and look at the manager in the eye, which is what I would have tended to do, just to say, okay, you know,
I'm listening
to you, or I'm taking on board something what you're saying. But I suppose they've been in such a dire situation for such a long time, the players probably just want to bury their heads as well, you know.
I presume you've been in clubs where everybody knows this manager's on his way out in the next couple of weeks, and that hangs over the whole place.
Yeah, totally.
Horrible kind of time, or if you're not that, sometimes is it like, yeah, can't wait.
Depends if he's doing a good job or not.
Yeah,
right?
So sometimes if he's not doing a good job, you might think to yourself, well, this is actually great because you're on the way out here and I don't have to listen to you anymore.
Yeah, could you please just hurry up and leave, because, you know, you're delaying the inevitable here and we're running out of games, because at least if we can get someone in here that can give us 25 games to play with, whereas if you stay here, we're going to start ticking down into 2019 games and then we're not turning this around. So it just depends how the players feel towards him.
How does a manager tend to lose a dressing room? Like, do players talk after a training session early on and say, you know, a new manager arrives? Do they talk, look at each other and say, that wasn't very good out there? Or is it matches? Is it tactics?
I think for me, it was like, I think if you tell a player to do something, right, and he does it, and it turns out to be wrong, I think that's the quickest player, because you're going, well, hang on, I mean, I did exactly what you asked me to do, and we still got beat. So, like, come on. Now, you might get away with one of those, because everyone goes, well, fair enough, you tried something. But if it's a regular occurrence where the manager is setting a team up and you're going, poor, this isn't helping us, like, we keep getting beat here, you know, or all of a sudden you're making substitutions at half-time, right, you know, we kind of did what you wanted, but you're still making changes, so the opposition have outthought you, and they were expecting to us to do what you wanted us to do, and, you know, we're now having to make changes, which means you're giving us 45 minutes every week to win a game.
Yeah.
So can you get it right from the start, please, so we can have 90 minutes to win a game? I think that's the quickest way players will start losing to respect for the manager, but losing kind of
trust.
The trust for him, really. And then once that goes, then the rest of it just goes. The discipline will fly out the window and everything, you know. And then I think it's just it's
quick spiral.
Then, yeah, very, very quickly.
And is there ever a temptation to go, I'm a senior player, I'm seeing the writing on the wall here very quickly, very early. And as you said, I don't want to run out of games here. We need to, like, accelerate this somehow. We need to, oh, hi, Mr. Chairman, I didn't expect to see you here.
No.
How are things going? Well, it's funny you ask.
Yeah, but
there must be that thing to, like, come on, we need to actually get to the inevitable here.
That's none of the player's business.
Really?
Yeah,
that wouldn't be the done thing?
No, that wouldn't be, no.
Okay.
Definitely not.
We'll warm him up. In a few weeks, we'll get it out. What about younger players and all that business? So, like, you know, that we've all seen the Warnock DVD documentary kind of thing where he's rah, 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 and throwing cups and all this kind of stuff. Can younger players handle that? Or is this, because this is the big cliche now that you can't talk to players that way anymore. You've obviously been across a decent spell, a couple of different generations coming through. Is the young players can't take that criticism thing exaggerated?
No, that's a fact. That's just the way the world has gone. You know, and probably for the better as well, you know, I mean.
Football didn't seem like a great environment in some ways.
Oh, it was mad. Yeah. Like, when I first went over, like, in kind of 2000 into that Leicester change room, there was murders every day. Lads were just, you know, it was carnage every day.
Yeah.
But that was the done thing. That was the accepted thing.
And they would have thought this is building character, whereas actually it could be ruining characters.
Both. But it could definitely create an environment where only the strong survive.
Yes.
Like, you never really kind of lasted if you were sensitive or if you couldn't take a joke or if you got milled in training and it upset you. You got weeded out very, very quickly. And I think that's what a lot of that stuff was for. You know, you want to weed out the weak here because, you know, it's going to be difficult enough throughout the season and we don't want people that are going to whinge and cry. Mm. You know, if you've got something to say or something's upset you, then either have it out or bury it and get on with your life. Either way, just don't, you know, bring it into training. And that was kind of the environment that you created, and that's what that type of culture created, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas otherwise, later in it was like, oh, can we talk about this? And you had to talk about it, right? And I was like, oh my God, do we really need to talk about this? Like, you know, can we not just have a fight and just get on with it and then we'll both shake hands and move on with our day? But it just wasn't like that anymore, you know.
I'll pick up on that in a sec. Liverpool have just scored. Champions League is ridiculous, really, the two games we've seen.
Unbelievable.
So 69 minutes, it looks like Salah. So Liverpool 4, Salzburg 3. I'll let you watch the replay, Damon. I'll give people the other updates. Genk and Napoli, nil all full-time. Borussia Dortmund winners tonight against Slavia Prague, 2-0. Barcelona have equalised against Inter. So that game 1-1 now. Suarez with a goal on 58 minutes. Chelsea and Lille are still 1-1 after 66 minutes. And then Ajax 3-0 up away to Valencia this evening after 67 minutes. That is about everything for this evening. And now Liverpool obviously 4-3 up against Salzburg.
That's a little bit of a kind of a scrappy goal. It's kind of bouncing around the box a little bit. Salzburg have cleared it. They've tried to have a touch, helped back into the box, and Firmino with a very, very clever header down to Salah, and you know, penalty spot kind of laces, middle of goal, straight past the keeper. There's nothing clever about that goal except for the header from Firmino, but I mean, it's just Liverpool have managed somehow
turn it back on
to turn the tide there, because I mean, you're full sure that Salzburg are going to go on and get the fourth with the way they're playing and their tails are up. But Liverpool being Liverpool, they have this amazing spirit and they just never know when they're beaten.
So were you dinosaur Delaney towards the end?
No, definitely not, no.
Okay.
No, you have to change. You know, you have to be willing to accept that society, I suppose, I don't know if that's the word really you'd use, but society has changed, and if you don't, then you're the odd one out, right?
And did you find that difficult to change?
No, not really. I just had to accept that this was the way the world was, you know, and you're just better off keeping your mouth shut and just, you know, managers will deal with it and coaches will deal with it now, whereas before it was an environment where if something was wrong, players dealt with it, right? So if there was someone who was kind of acting up, the players would deal with it, whereas now it was the manager had to, you know, call him in and
sort it out that way.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I remember towards the end of my time when I was at Palace, like, I remember going in for a meeting with Frank de Boer, and like, I walked in there and his assistant was sitting there.
So he had a witness.
And I was like going, why is he sitting here?
Yeah.
I mean, I came in to have a conversation with you and you went, oh, I need a witness. And I went, I'm 36 years of age and you've played for Barcelona. I mean, seriously, man, even if the two of us, like, if you threw me out this window now, I'd dust myself down and just, you know, get on my days. I'm not going to, like, have a tribunal or go to sue you or anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that was it. Like, and I just, that wound me up a little bit because I just thought, get him out, please. It's none of his business.
You'd almost see that as a lack of trust in me that you need a witness.
I don't know why he was doing it, but I was just like, it doesn't, like, please. But that's
the way the world now.
That is the way the world goes now, yeah.
Like, if me and you need to have a conversation after this show about our performance tonight, we'll need a HR witness. This is just...
I definitely wouldn't survive in a HR world.
I think, yeah, it must be a shock for a lot of footballers. It's mad the way it goes. So, we're going to take a short break. 72 minutes on the clock. Liverpool 4-3 up on Salzburg. There's a few other things we're going to pick through between now and 10 o'clock, and we'll keep you on top of all the games.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Now then, you're very welcome back. So we're keeping an eye on the Champions League this evening. Still no change at Anfield. Liverpool 4, Salzburg 3. We have Damien Delaney in studio. We just caught sight. I should have mentioned it really because he scored a hat-trick in the first round of the Champions League and everybody was pretty interested to see how he'd do tonight. Erling Braut Haaland, son of Alfie, has scored his second goal this evening. 4-3 Liverpool. He's scored two goals tonight, son of Alfie Inge Haaland, and scored three in the opening round of the Champions League. We haven't seen much of him. We're trying to chat here and keep an eye on it, Damien, but you just caught sight of him there, and he has pace anyway.
He just made it's the first time I've really seen him, to be honest. Yeah. He's a big size. He's a big man. He's got pace. Mm. He just made a run there, kind of a diagonal run, and he left everyone for dead. Now, the guy used him as a decoy, cut inside and have a shot, but the first thing I thought was, wow, absolute, like, serious pace.
From memory, Dad didn't have a lot of pace. I wouldn't say Alfie was tearing people apart with his pace.
No, definitely not, but his son definitely has a turn of foot, definitely.
He's young as well, isn't he? 17, 18?
Oh, imagine that, 17, 18.
We'll double check that. Just gone 19, so serious prospect. There's a text in tonight. My main thought, lads, watching Liverpool and listening to yourselves on the radio are that Manchester United are a billion miles off scoring the types of goals Liverpool scored in that first half. That's a very down Manchester United fan.
They're not even scoring the goals, just even playing for 2 minutes at the pace Liverpool play at. Man United are absolutely incapable of that. No way.
Why are Manchester United so pedestrian, amongst other things? Because on the face of it, they look to have a bit of pace in the side.
They don't. They've not got really any pace. They've got no players with electric pace, really.
Is Rashford and the likes not fast enough?
Players with electric pace, but know where to run, when to run. You know, I mean, he does need green grass in front of him, which if you don't have, then you need to make clever darting runs in between full-backs, centre-backs, opposite movement, coming short, spinning in behind. You know, I don't think Rashford has got a lot of that, whereas Liverpool have loads of clever, smart players. There is an argument to say that a lot of that might come down to a little bit of coaching as well, but Liverpool definitely are light years ahead of Man United right now.
It does feel like light years. Yeah. Because the way the likes of Firmino, Salah, Mane, when they were signed, it's not like the world looked on and thought, wow, amazing, huge signing. They've got better year on year on year on year, which would lead you to think it's about the coaching and the quality of the movement.
Recruitment as well, you know. Jurgen Klopp knew exactly what he wanted because he knew exactly where he was going. He knew that when he took the job, he had to rebuild and he needed to get a lot of players out and get his type of players in because he had an end kind of game in mind. And this is what he would have had in mind. Whereas Man United just seemed to be like going from window to window and just signing players because, well, they're kind of doing all right somewhere.
They almost signed Dybala just because they kind of could.
Yeah, but I mean, if one player is doing well, so let's say you took Harry Kane, for argument's sake, now and say he wouldn't fit in the Liverpool side. You know, he's not dynamic, he's not overly quick. Yes, he's very, very good, but he fits into the Spurs system very, very well because he has a lot of legs around him and he uses a focal point. Liverpool don't have a focal point. All three of them are just speedy players and they just run and run and run until you can't run anymore.
Because it was interesting when Klopp arrives, one of the first things he does without even looking at him is say, Benteke, goodbye.
Exactly. And I think he said that recently in an interview that he was going for small, quick players, you know.
Most managers, maybe less sure of themselves, would have thought, well, I'll give him 6 months, I'll give him a chance.
No, because he knew straight away this guy just does not fit into what I'm looking to do here. Whereas Man United see a player doing well at a football club and they go, oh, he's doing well, we'll sign him.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, he's doing well at a certain club because he's in a certain system and it's suiting him and everybody else is on the same page as him. You can't just take that player out of that system and stick him in Man United and go, can you please do what you were doing?
Is football more like that than ever now, that the system dictates?
Definitely.
Almost, yeah, more than even 20 years ago.
But you need players that fit that system, you know, and I'm sure there's some players now out there that Liverpool wouldn't take because they don't suit what they're trying to do, even though they're like world-class players and everyone thinks they're fantastic.
How would you describe the Manchester United system?
The way they're playing or their transfer strategy? The way they're playing? It's nothing. It's just a patchwork of thrown together, and that's what happens when you have an executive non-football person in charge of transfers. I mean, the manager, I presume every window will go to the owners with a list for every position of what he's looking for, and on that list will be players he wants, and then I'm pretty sure that following day in training a guy walks through the door and the manager goes, well, I know I wanted a centre forward, I want this type of centre forward, you've given me one that I don't really know what to do with him. That's what it looks like is going on in Man United. I don't know. But it looks like Ed Woodward, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ed Woodward just, you know, sees centre forward on a list or left back and he just goes and gets a left back and kind of brings him in and goes, look what I got you. And it's like, I didn't really want him.
They've also hired very different managers who've been given 2-3 years in charge. Like the types of players that Van Gaal was signing in comparison to Mourinho, who wanted the more physical, athletic types. Like it's totally opposite managers.
Yeah.
And they've been in complete control of the transfers.
Yeah.
And now Solskjaer's come in and we don't quite know exactly who he wants yet or what he wants to do yet. Who has he signed so far?
Wan-Bissaka.
Maguire was about
Maguire,
the big one.
Wan-Bissaka.
Weren't bad signings, but in terms of attacking play.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I mean, again, it was just a case of like, we need defenders, okay, let's just go and get two. I think Wan-Bissaka is a good one. I'm not sure Harry Maguire is a great signer for Man United. He's a good player, don't get me wrong, he's a very, very good player, but I mean, we're talking Man United here. You know, when you look at Van Dijk and Harry Maguire, there's, you know, even though they both cost the same amount of money, you know, there's definitely a difference there.
Does Maguire have a certain thing you're not too fond of?
Yeah, he looks cumbersome, you know, he's very, very, now I know he's in complete control of what he's doing and he is very, very good, but he's just, there's something about him just I don't really like. I mean, maybe if they went and got, Koulibaly was rumoured, right, so I mean, someone like that, you're looking going, okay, now we're into the upper echelons of world-class centre-backs.
I haven't seen Harry Maguire caught terribly for pace yet, but you do feel like it's waiting to happen.
He won't get caught for pace, but I've seen him a couple of times caught flat-footed, and reacting late.
Okay.
You know, I did see the goal that they conceded against Crystal Palace. Jordan Ayew scored it. It was just one long ball and he was just daydreaming a little bit.
Especially with Lindelof in the air, who's not the best in the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Harry's going to need to be in there behind him a bit.
I mean, that is centre-back 101, that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, one goes up, one covers round, right. And he just seemed to be a little bit like either flat-footed or lacking concentration, and I've seen that in a couple of times in the West Ham game as well, just a little bit reactive.
No, look, it is 101. For my scenes in the Leinster Senior League, I played centre-half towards the end and my centre-half partner was very tall, so the system was very easy.
Yeah.
Ball comes, you jump, I'll run in behind you.
Everybody knows this. I mean, this is like expected to miss it type of stuff.
Totally.
You know?
But he was very, it was very like...
He has that in the locker, right?
Does
he does. I've seen him do that a few times.
Okay.
And I think, especially in the teams he's played in, it might get overlooked slightly, you know, at Leicester and stuff, right? Whereas at Man United, even if you have a great game, you do something like that, it's going to be highlighted.
Irish radio are talking about you the next day.
Yeah.
You know, it's a global thing. Somebody says, great insights from Damien. I didn't want to leave the car to go training earlier. Now I don't want to go home so I can keep listening. Well, good man, we're on till 10. Lads, can you ask Damien about Wilfried Zaha? He seems like an unbelievable talent. What was he like day to day? Was he good in training? How high up a level does Damien think he can go? Wonders Tom.
Wilf's a fantastic player. Like, I mean, he's the type of talent that, I mean, we were talking about earlier, you can't teach what he has.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you could practice, I mean, that is God-given or whatever it is you believe, that is natural talent. I'm always interested with him. I mean, he has the talent to go. Does he have the discipline to kind of, you know, fit into a system like a Pep Guardiola system or a Liverpool system? I'm not sure. I think Wilf is a very off-the-cuff player and he plays on instinct a lot. And those two guys that I just mentioned, I don't like that. You know, they're very, very structured. You know, you're told where to run, when to run and how to run, and you better be there. You know, when
has it really gone that structured?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You can see with these Liverpool players, they're on. They're
it's choreographed.
Really, yeah. I mean, yeah. They
is anyone at the top level playing great instinctive football as a team? Like, are Real Madrid still doing it, or is there anyone really doing it?
No, not in football. I think both with and without the ball, now all teams are very, very structured. I mean, I'm not saying you can't go off script at all. I mean, you can, sure. But there's a time and a place, and if you do go off script, you better be right.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you have a tendency to go off script just for the sake of it, just to kind of see what happens, and all of a sudden the ball turns over and you're not where you're supposed to be, well, then that's probably what they don't like. But look, he's a great player. He's a fantastic talent. He's a good boy. Having my differences with him over the years, but he's 26, 27 now. I think
it's never, never really.
It really is with him. Yeah, you know.
And was he good in training as well? I'd say.
He's super. Like, yeah.
He wouldn't get stood up one on ones too often.
I used to go. Yeah, a lot. Yeah, and that's why we didn't get on.
You try and nutmeg me one more time.
Yeah, and then I'd say, if you try and kick me one more time. So that was kind of how it went on a daily basis.
It's funny, it's interesting someone texting, because I had jotted down Zaha to ask you about anyway, because I saw Graeme Souness was saying recently, I can see him playing for Real Madrid. That was how highly, I think he's sensational, he said to Sky. You might laugh at this, I can see him playing for Real Madrid, that's how good he is. Change of direction, balance, unique, or almost unique. I think that's why he gets fouled, he should get more penalties. I don't see him as a diver. And he goes on to say, he's ready for a very big, big club, the biggest clubs.
He is, but he has to demonstrate that he can fit into a team structure. He has to demonstrate that he will be diligent, because when he plays with Palace, if he knocks off, someone will fill in for him and stuff. At that level, like we saw yesterday with Serge Aurier at right back, sometimes you have to do your own job. You won't get any help. Okay. Because other people are busy doing other things. I can't help you tonight. And I think if Wilfred was playing in those big, big games, they're the kind of ones where he might let the side down if he went on a mazy run and tried something audacious and it didn't come off, and all of a sudden now your right winger's on the left wing, stood next to your left winger, and your team shape was kind of collapsed, because these top teams will recognise that very, very quickly, and they'll go straight for your weak spot.
So when you watch the Liverpool front three or Man City, they're all working to a plan, are they? They're not just saying, I fancy a dribble here.
No, I mean, they are to a point, but I mean, ultimately, they are repeating the same patterns over and over again. You can see them, they're making the same runs, like, if they're wide, they're making internal runs, Firmino, they're making the same ones. And that's why they link up so well, because they know what they're doing. They've been told, listen, when you have the ball here, make this run. And that's why they can do all these. Sometimes you see them pass the ball and it almost looks like it's blind.
Sure.
And it's unbelievable where they reverse a pass and someone's coming in. Because they know there's people going to be there and stuff. And that's kind of how you build that wavelength that you're trying to be on,
Whereas Zaha'd get a ball and see a defender and say, oh, well, I fancy this, I'm going to have a run.
Well, he sometimes would get it and there'd be three players against him, right? And then you see that happen a lot at Crystal Palace, where teams will, like, the right back will be there, the right wing will be there, and the number six will come over. And that's kind of where you want him to say, listen, there's three on you, they're light somewhere, right? So that's the time you pass it, that's the time you get it into your number 10. Because if the six is over, the winger is back, and the full back's with you, there'll be holes somewhere. Where sometimes he gets the ball and he's just on this, like, I can beat all three.
Yeah.
And sometimes he does.
Maybe if he was at a bigger club.
That's a good argument. That is,
less pressure for him to be the match winner.
I'm pretty sure, but I'm sure if those big clubs thought that, they would have gone.
Yeah, it was interesting. Everton went for him this year, which is
isn't
obviously not
really
the,
a step not, up for
it's
him.
Not really,
you know?
No. And they Palace wanted 80 million. I mean, I thought that was fair enough to say we want 80 million for him.
Yeah.
Somebody else just wanted to know, Damien clearly very interested in the tactical side of the game. What team, from a tactical point of view, does he think are the most sophisticated, most enjoyable to watch if he's sat at home at the weekend? That's great.
The obvious one is Pep, really. I love watching, they have this new thing though where they almost play with four players up front in a line, like, right? So you'd have them all almost marking the opposition back four, and then, like, two will come short and two will go behind, And it's really, really interesting to watch. You'll see, like, maybe the two inside ones, one will come short, one will go in behind. And if it's the two wide ones, one will come short and Raheem Sterling will make the diagonal run. Other times, Raheem will come short and he'll make the run. And it's very, very difficult as a defender if one goes short and one goes long, because all they want to do is create that split second of hesitancy. So if you're standing there and you've, say, Bernardo Silva in front of you and Raheem on the left-hand side of you, and one goes short, and then out of the corner of your eye you see Raheem going in behind, all of a sudden you create that little, oh, hang on a minute, who do I go with? And that's all it takes, because then they're gone, right? You know, I mean, that's what they create. And they create indecision, and they just keep creating it, and then they just wait for that one moment that you stop, don't do anything, because you're thinking, what should I be doing?
Yes.
And it's milliseconds.
Indecision, right. Done. And when they are in that four up on your back four, for instance, and then they, you know, two go and two stay or two move behind, is there a trigger? Are they all doing that around the same time?
Usually you see it when, let's say, Mendy has a ball on the left touchline and he plays the ball back inside to David Silva. All of a sudden, no, I think it looks like that's their trigger, because, you know, it kind of comes back on an angle to point. And when it comes back to point, all of a sudden, now you see it all happening. And it's like one comes short, one goes in behind. And I know when you watch it back in the goal, you say, oh my God, how did the fullback not see Raheem coming off my back shoulder? Because, you know, it seems like such an obvious thing, right? But you can see in front of the left back, something else will have happened that will have took his eye for a split second, where he's just gone, oh, is my number six going to deal with that, or am I supposed to do with that? And that's what they want to create. Like, so they get it wide and then they come back to point. And then when it comes back to point, that's when they all just set off like mad, you know.
It helps when it's David Silva on the ball.
Well, of course it does, because he will deliver it on the money, or De Bruyne even, you know.
Yeah, just De Bruyne's crossing is like going to
another
level.
Well, he's done that in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've watched him. It's almost like, you know, Kyle Walker gets to the end line, he plays it back to the corner of the box and it's just blind. But you know full well, like if you watch where, let's say, Raheem Sterling seems to be getting in of a lot of them when he's on the left. So Kyle Walker gets to the end line, plays it back, and De Bruyne's not even looked. And as the ball's coming back, Sterling's gone. And he knows that he's just going to play that blind, and he does. He's just whipping that into an area, and it's almost impossible to, because you can't gamble as a defender on that. You have to wait for the cross to be in the air before you can go and attack it, because you can't gamble on crosses where centre forwards can.
It's amazing, really, because you think of Pep and you think of Barcelona and even City, and it's intricate passing around the box, but he's actually not afraid when he's realised to have a weapon like De Bruyne.
Yeah.
It's like David Beckham 20 years ago. He's like, well, if you're that good at crossing, we'll make that work for us. I'm not going to be shy about it. Mm.
Yeah, it's of course he's about winning games really ultimately for him, isn't it?
So, so is he still slightly ahead of the pack for you, Pep, when it comes to thinking about the game? It feels like there's a lot of incredible managers around the moment. Like, we're looking at Klopp, who's done a remarkable job as well.
Klopp just bludgeons you into submission, though. You know what I mean? With his pace, he just sets off at a pace and just like, okay, if you can live with us, good luck.
Yeah.
And usually, well, not usually, but most of them people can't, right? Whereas Pep was definitely more thoughtful, more insightful, looking like playing it like a game of chess, really, you know.
Yeah, we're going to take a very short break. Liverpool 4, Salzburg 3. That's into injury time now. 2.5 minutes of 3 added minutes gone. Barcelona have come back from a goal down to Inter to lead 2-1. Suarez has scored twice for Barcelona in the 58th and 84th minutes. So Barcelona 2-1 up against Inter. And let me just check on Chelsea. Where are they? They're 2-1 up away to Lille. Tammy Abraham on 22 minutes, and then Willian on 78 minutes either side of a Lille goal. So Chelsea headed for an away win this evening. We're back in 1 second.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Welcome back full time. So Salzburg are happy enough actually with their 4-3 loss in a way. They're gone down to their away fans. Liverpool very happy with the 4-3 win, that's for sure. Chelsea, Willian to the rescue for them, 2-1 against Lille. They're into the very final few seconds there. And as we mentioned, Barcelona 2, Inter 1 is now a full time this evening. Here's a hell of a text. Now, Liverpool are brilliant to watch, but they're very dependent on Salah and Mane. If you take those two out, then they look ordinary. I mean, if you take any team's two best players out, in fairness, they're going to be a bit
I think
ordinary.
You're doing Liverpool a bit of a disservice. That's what a Man United fan wrote that in, definitely.
Robbie Keane, says Brian, didn't get a look in at Liverpool because he was strictly an off-the-cuff player. Is that right?
I've seen the argument made before about Robbie that he was kind of encroaching into Gerrard's area, you know, when Gerrard was bombing forward, Robbie was, you know, dropping into those little pockets. Maybe there's some merit in that argument, I don't know.
He didn't even play very much, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's difficult, man. I can't remember the spell particularly
well,
if I'm being honest with you.
It seemed like Rafa was hell-bent on getting Gareth Barry around that time as well. And he scored one great goal away to Arsenal. That's the main memory you have at Keane's time.
Yeah.
Beyond that,
yeah,
not too
I'd
much.
I'd be reluctant to talk on that, to be honest.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Liverpool tonight, then?
Well, it takes some amount of doing, like, when it goes to 3-3, like, to get in it, finish the game at 3-3, it takes a tremendous amount to kind of to stem that tide. But not only that, they flip the game on its head and win 4-3 up. That just is a mark of the quality that they have and the team spirit, the organisation and belief that they have. Because as I said, normally at 3-1, 3-3, you're kind of going, OK, let's get a draw here, it's not a bad result. Because you're fully expecting Salzburg to get the fourth, but they didn't. They just went again and they go 4-3 up and then saw it out, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, it's a measure of how good they actually are and, you know, that's fantastic management from Klopp and fantastic belief from the players.
Who do you think is going to win the league, by the way?
The Premier League? I want to say Liverpool.
You're a Liverpool fan?
No. I believe that they're motivated after what happened last year. They look like they're primed more to dig out the you know, the people complain they're not
Banana
playing
skins,
well,
yeah.
But they're winning games 1-0, which you have to do if you're going to win a league. I'm not sure Man City at the moment are playing with the same edge that they did last year. I think Liverpool will probably get close to the points total they had last year, and I just can't see Man City matching what they did last year. So by that kind of thinking, I think Liverpool might just do it, but it's Liverpool, so you never know.
Yeah, no, that's true. We're pretty much done. Thanks a million, Damon Delaney in studio again. Appreciate it. You'll be back again for another Champions League evening soon. In the meantime, OTBAM back tomorrow, 7:30 in all the usual places. And then Nathan in the hot seat tomorrow from 7 with Dan McDonald. They'll be reacting to Ireland-Russia tomorrow over in Japan. And then John Giles will be on as well. Tom Dunn's on the way next. Good luck.
Give you a move with guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta.